Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, February 23rd, 2021. Stop the spread, wear a mask, protect yourself and others against COVID-19. Medical examiner's quarters viewed. Commissioners discuss possible need for bigger building. OA News at OAOA.com. Ector County Commissioners today will consider using Federal CARES Act money to buy a bigger building for the medical examiner's office, which is currently housed at 200 A West 3rd Street in Odessa. In their 10 a.m. session today in the County Administration Building at 1010 East 8th Street, the commissioners will hear Chief Medical Investigator Ron Inga seek more supplies and a cooler with a capacity for 20 bodies. Precinct 1 Commissioner Mike Gardner said Monday that the proposal's feasibility has not been established. Gardner said the ME's office has been using a mobile storage system for bodies during the pandemic, but the court was in the preliminary stage of its considerations. They've been overwhelmed and are looking for a long-term solution, he said. I can't speak for everyone else, but I'm not sold on it yet. I'm not sure if CARES money would cover all of it or if that's the best way to spend it. Precinct 3 Commissioner Don Stringer said there was a possibility that a new ME's building would be constructed near the sheriff's office and jail south of town off U.S. 385. They are understaffed and under square footaged, Stringer said. In other business, the court will go into an executive session in part to discuss hiring a public information officer. Gardner said a PIO would provide a better flow of information. We have talked about doing it, and we have some interviews tomorrow, he said. I'm not totally sure I'm for it. We need to look into it a little bit more and see what ideas the applicants have and what benefits we would get out of it. Stringer said he had not considered the PIO question in depth, but hiring one would make it easier for the media to cover county government. The court will also discuss COVID-19-related issues and Governor Abbott's disaster declaration in response to last week's statewide blizzard and power outages. Accept one 30-yard trash container each from Westex Disposal and Basin Disposal, and thank the companies for their contributions in combating illegal dumping. A cubic yard of trash can be spread over 100 square feet, or a 10-by-10-foot area at 3 inches of depth. Consider installing additional speed limit signs at the intersection of Joan Drive and Robin Avenue in West Odessa. Accept a $5,000 donation from Occidental Petroleum Corporation for the Sheriff's Office. Review appropriating $450,000 to hire JSA Architects and built an addition onto the sheriff's evidence vault and armory. Consider leasing property from MCA Properties for a law enforcement substation. Discuss amending the county's contract with Securus Technologies to implement video visitation for inmates. Review hiring part-time nurses at the jail. Looking for answers. Photo by Jacob Ford, Odessa American. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick speaks about the hearings this week into the statewide power outages and investigations into ERCOT during a press conference Monday afternoon at Midland International Air and Spaceport. Patrick wants outage answers. Lieutenant Governor tells Texans not to panic as hearings are coming. By Michael Bauer. MBAUER at OAOA.com. Midland. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick is urging Texans not to panic over high electric bills and to remain calm as officials investigate what led to massive power outages across the state during last week's historic storm that plunged most of Texas into freezing temps. Next steps for Texas, he said, cleanup and the process of investigating all that went wrong during and the past week. Patrick says that as far as energy bills go, people shouldn't freak out. He spoke at a press briefing Monday afternoon at the Signature Flight Support Lobby at Midland International Airport. Right now, we don't want people to panic about their energy bills, Patrick said. We'll figure that out. Number two, a couple of lessons here and everywhere I go. I hear people saying, maybe I should have bought that $500 generator and have a few gallons of gas in my tank, but we shouldn't have to rely on generators to provide heat and phones and internet. They're going to have to contact their local officials and gather up who needs help. The governor is asking the president for more help. Patrick described the events last week as a perfect storm of a lot of factors. He said they hope to get answers later this week during hearings to find answers to the power failures that left some in Texas without gas, water, or electricity for days as temps plummeted. But here's the bottom line. We're going to get a lot more answers to all these questions, starting with Thursday and Friday in our investigative hearings, Patrick said. There are no excuses. People don't want excuses, but we want them to understand in part what has happened. These hearings' purposes are to find out what happened so that we can fix what happened so that it never happens again. As far as the costs of high electric bills go, Patrick said they don't have an answer yet, but that they would work on a solution. People have been hit with big bills, Patrick said. Don't panic. We're working on that issue. I don't know how we're going to address that at the end of the day, but do not panic. We're going to figure out a solution. That's all I can say today because we have to work through this. He was adamant during the press briefing that he would give the public assurance that they would address the issue of high electric bills. Today, I can give them this assurance. We're going to do everything we can to address that, Patrick said. My goal, and I can't speak for all the senators, but my goal is to make sure that we address that. I'm just saying, don't worry about that today. We're not going to unplug anybody's power. Don't freak about it. State Senator Kel Seliger, who represents District 31, was also present at the press briefing as well and said they were not going to sit and point fingers as they looked to see what steps should have been taken after the 2011 winter storm 10 years ago. We're going to have hearings, and we're going to find out who wasn't ready and who should have taken the steps after 2011 and then didn't in 2021. Seliger said. What should that legislation look like? We need to answer that. Disaster declaration. On Saturday, President Joe Biden declared a major disaster declaration for only 77 of the 254 total counties in the state of Texas. Ector County was not one of the counties in that declaration. While it's unclear if Ector County will be added, Patrick said he was disappointed that the feds only declared the 77 of our 254 counties to be emergency areas. On Monday, U.S. Representative August Pfluger and Henry Cuellar led a bipartisan group of 27 members of the Texas congressional delegation in sending a letter to President Biden asking him to immediately approve the individual assistance program for all 254 counties in Texas. We fear that your initial federal emergency management agency, FEMA, declaration falls far short of the actual needs of our state and requests the immediate approval of all 254 Texas counties for individual assistance, members wrote in the letter. Health Sciences announcements on tap. OANews at OAOA.com. Naming agreements for the new Health Sciences Building and an Odessa Development Corporation announcement are among the items on the agenda when the Odessa College Board of Trustees meets virtually at 6 p.m. today. The board meeting may be viewed online, and the public may access the meeting at https://odessa-edu.zoom.us/s/931292-0616. The webinar ID is 931-2920-6616. And the passcode is 439434. You may dial in at 1-346-248-7799. The 83,000 square foot health sciences building will cost almost $40 million. The project has received support from the Wood Family Foundation and Medical Center Health System. Some other items on the agenda are approval of course fees for fall 2021, approval of the health sciences building budget, an education report from Strategies for Success to Learning Framework, an institutional effectiveness report, the president's report from President Gregory Williams, including the Dream 2021 conference update. OC hosted the Texas Alliance for Minorities Engineering Competition, Spring Starter Kit Giveaway, Black History Month activities, and Coffee and Community Conversation, Vaccines, Now What? County crews plugging potholes. Storm damage includes burst boiler line at courthouse. OA News at OAOA.com. Now that the thick snow and ice from last week's blizzard have finally melted, Ector County is dotted with potholes that men from the county highways and streets department are filling in. Building damages were minimal, but maintenance had to move quickly to staunch a ruptured line in a frozen boiler at the downtown courthouse during the gusting double-tough weather that saw overnight temperatures reach 0 degrees. Precinct 1 Commissioner Mike Gardner said Monday that a patching machine acquired by the Highways and Streets Department last year will come into heavy use, especially in his big west side precinct. The guys will be busy for a while repairing places in the roads where the water and ice got down into the cracks and froze, Gardner said, adding that the crews will often be dispatched to potholes reported by the commissioner's constituents. They clean the area and fill it back up with aggregate, he said. Gardner said workers supervised by Building Maintenance Director Charles Pierce stopped water flowing from the burst line. Charlie and his guys did an outstanding job through all of this, he said. Noting that the courthouse has two boilers in its basement, he said, it was the smaller one that went out, but the larger one still worked. Gardner said the malfunctioning boiler had already been in the process of being replaced by Johnson Controls, which is also upgrading the lights and heating air conditioning in all county buildings. They'll get it there as soon as possible, he said. Precinct 3 Commissioner Don Stringer said the county offices were closed almost every day last week. He said Pierce was still assessing possible damages, but had preliminarily reported minimal problems. 389 days. For 389 days, the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through January 6th, the city has spent $112,138.47 of taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information on crime in Odessa. COVID-19 news by the numbers. ECISD daily cases, 3 students, 0 staff. U.S. cases, 27,938,085 total confirmed and 497,415 deaths. Find out more at dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. Closing prices. Posted, $57.97. Futures, $61.49. Natural gas, $2.953. Benchmark U.S. rose $2.25 to $61.49 per barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Longtime employee retires after 30 years. OA Life at OAOA.com. After 30 years of working at Slater Controls, Leon Hicks is retiring to spend more time with family and travel. Hicks was controller and office manager, among many other things. She has literally done every position at Slater Controls, from accounting, sales, shipping and receiving, and to even driving a forklift. She was one of three people that started Slater Controls in the very beginning. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, February 23rd, 2021. Local news roundup. Benefit and dinner. The Live Center of Andrews has scheduled an evening benefit and dinner featuring speaker Dr. Kathy Koch, Celebrate Kids Incorporated founder and president, at 6 p.m. today at First Baptist Church, 201 East 2nd Street, Andrews. For tickets, visit tinyurl.com/R91RS8X2. Reduce Reuse Campaign. Keep Odessa Beautiful are accepting gently used items at the Household Hazardous Waste Facility, 814 West 42nd Street. Items collected will be donated to local nonprofit organizations. Items can consist of coffee tables, small appliances, bedroom furniture, end tables, lamps, dressers, cabinets, books, or dining room furniture. Items may be dropped off from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Tuesday through Friday and from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. When dropping off, tag KOB on social media for a chance to enter a drawing for a prize at keepodessa-beautiful or email pictured to KOB@odessa-tx.gov. Visit www.facebook.com/keepodessa-beautiful. COVID vaccine conversation. Young Professionals of Odessa has scheduled a candid COVID conversation, Vaccines, with featured speaker, ORMC Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohit Saravanan, from 6:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m., March 4th on Zoom, us-02web.zoom.us. Visit tinyurl.com/3QGX99GN. OA News at OAOA.com. Council could expand ODC. Meeting planned today will be virtual by Federico Martinez, FMARTINEZ at OAOA.com. Odessa City Council will consider expanding the Odessa Development Corporation Board from 5 to 7 members during a 6 p.m. virtual council meeting today. Increasing the number of board members would enable City Council, which also has 7 members, to each be able to appoint one person to the ODC board, said Wesley Burnett, Director of Economic Development for the Odessa Chamber of Commerce. The council currently votes as a group to assign residents to the ODC board, Burnett said. Previously, the council's 5 members, minus the mayor and council member at large, each had the authority to assign one member to the board. K Council is expected to discuss whether to increase the board number and whether to continue voting as a group or return to the old practice of giving each council member the authority to assign one member, Burnett said. We have a strong board, Burnett said. We hope if council decides to increase the board's size, they keep the strong board we already have and add to it. I'm sure they will. Mayor Javier Hoven could not be reached for comment. The ODC provides job creation grants, capital investment grants, and other incentives for businesses seeking to expand in Odessa. The group also promotes and develops industrial and manufacturing enterprises in order to eliminate unemployment and bring in new jobs. Turnaround partner considered for Ector. OA News at OAOA.com. A turnaround partner for Ector College Prep Success Academy and an update on a turnaround plan for Bonham Middle School will be considered by the Ector County ISD Board of Trustees during their 6 p.m. meeting today, Tuesday. The meeting will be held in the first floor boardroom of the administration building, 802 North Sam Houston Avenue. Everyone is required to stop at the front desk, have their temperature taken, and answer screening questions prior to accessing building. Visitors are required to wear a face mask. The meeting was postponed from February 16th due to bad weather. Third Future, a charter network in Aurora, Colorado, is the candidate to take over Ector College Prep Success Academy. The ECISD board non-renewed its contract with Ector Success Academy Network January 19th. The contract with ESAN ends June 30th. Third Future presented to the school board at its February 9th meeting. Senate Bill 1882, signed into effect by the Texas Legislature in 2017, provides incentives for districts to contract to partner with an open enrollment charter school, institutions of higher education, nonprofits, or government entities, the Texas Education Agency website says. Ector was in its fifth year of improvement required under state accountability standards. If it didn't come off the list, it could have faced closure, or the Texas Education Commissioner could appoint a board of managers over the whole district. Public Information Officer Mike Adkins said in a text message that when the Texas Education Agency paused ratings for this year, it gave ECISD additional time to look at more options. Adkins said that is what the board will discuss. On separate items, the board will consider Chapter 313 property tax valuation limitation applications from Nacero TX1 LLC and 1.5 P1 LLC. Supplemental agenda material says acceptance of the application does not bind the district into entering a contract with the applicant, but provides the option to consider the application and potential future contract for a Chapter 313 agreement for property value limitation and revenue. The state comptroller's website says an appraised value limitation is an agreement in which a taxpayer agrees to build or install property and create jobs in exchange for a 10-year limitation on the taxable property value for school district maintenance and operations tax purposes. The minimum limitation value varies by school district. The application for a limitation on the appraised value for M&O purposes is submitted directly to the school district and requires an application fee that is established by each school district. The board will also consider approving a contract with the Ector County Elections Office for the May 1st ECISD Board of Trustees election. Places 2, 4, 5, and 7 are up for election. Place 2 is held by Board President Delma Abalos. Place 4 is held by Chris Stanley. He is challenged by Jesse Christensen. Stanley was appointed to the position after Doyle Woodall resigned. Secretary Steve Brown represents Position 5, and Nelson Minyard is in Position 7. the only contested race is for place four. Early voting is from April 19th through April 27th. Special presentations will include recognition of the ECISD Nursing Director, Becky Rhodes, Fall 2020 Academic All-State Athletes, and Texas Music Educators Association All-State Musicians. Agenda, TINYURL.com/335OA2Y8. Texas Economic Developer Act, TINYURL.com/5CZG26MH. OPD investigating theft. OA News at OAOA.com. At about 6:30 p.m. January 28th, a theft occurred at the Boot Barn, located at 5125 East 42nd Street. Investigation revealed that an unknown man took over $1,000 worth of property and fled the scene through the emergency exit door. Anyone who recognizes the suspect shown in the surveillance photo is encouraged to contact Detective Jay Santana at 432-335-4964 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS, and reference case number 21-900050. On the net, www.odessa-tx.gov/civicalerts, CIVICALERTS dot ASPX, AID equal 184. Schools on top of storm repairs. OA News at OAOA.com. Ector County ISD, Odessa College, and University of Texas Permian Basin are assessing damage and making repairs to their buildings in the wake of last week's frigid temperatures, burst pipes, power outages, snow, and ice. ECISD Public Information Officer Mike Adkins said to get ready for Monday's classes, repairs were made at 21 campuses' facilities, two of which were roof leaks. 19 were waterline breaks or leaks, and the roof repairs necessary to open schools have been made. Adkins said there were also 14 classrooms were directly impacted by water leaks or breaks, and the estimated cost is $15,700. However, most of the work was done in-house. OC Vice President of Administrative Services Ken Zartner said a lot of different things occurred on campus during the storm. The most significant damage that we had was to our fire suppression systems at Century Commons, which is the student housing. Those are outside suppression systems that are water-filled, so basically those pipes busted. It's on the southwest side of Century Commons, Zartner said. He added that it completely destroyed about 6 or 7 rooms. Fortunately, because of COVID, we didn't have students on that side of the area because we only have 50% occupancy right now. But those rooms are completely gone. We're gutting all the drywall today, Monday, and we filed insurance last week immediately and beginning the work. All three floors were just completely drenched, so that's probably the most significant damage. We didn't have power for 3-plus days or so, and once the power went out, our servers and backup generators failed, and we had no technology on campus for 3 days. It was basically lights out in most of our areas, so that was a hindrance. The power outages definitely came with the trials and its own troubles, but as far as facility damage, we had a main pipe burst in our campus center, which caused some flooding. Fortunately, it was the cafeteria area, and that's all of the ceramic-style floor, so it was able to clean up, Zartner said. We had some fire suppression systems on the outside of our wood math and science building burst as well. We were able to shut those off, and there was no damage inside, and then we have a couple of different roofs that have some significant leakage. One of the roofs, though, was unfortunately in one of the most expensive labs that we have on campus. He is referring to Professor of Photography Steve Goff's computers in the Electronics Technology Building. The roof collapsed on top of those devices. I have my technical guys looking at that right now, but I think it might be completely ruined. But other than that, it was about keeping our campus as safe as we can, because we have 100-plus residents here. We had to keep the walkways, the food going, the heat on as much as we possibly can in those areas, and just kind of keeping everybody in a safe space, Zartner said. While electricity powers many items on campus, Zartner said most things run on gas. Our generators run off of gas as well. The one time we needed them, they failed. Something happened with the computer. It was just too cold for everything to be handled. I think we had Honeywell. We had all sorts of vendors out here trying to work on some stuff. It was a very challenging 3 days for us, Zartner said. The insurance adjuster came out last Friday and did a walkthrough. I think we're looking at about $50,000 right now. It might double up to $100,000 if you have to replace actual 2x4s and all those things. We won't know until we start tearing everything out, which they're starting already today, he added. UTPB had damage at several of its buildings, but there are no dollar damage estimates yet. Communications manager Alexa Dunson said the engineering building had a fire sprinkler pipe burst on the ceiling in the lobby area, causing extensive water damage to the floor, furniture, and carpet. Also, a bib outside the building froze and broke inside the wall. Dunson said there was no equipment damage, but there was some damage to the wall and sheetrock. At the D. Kirk Edwards Family Human Performance Center, a washing machine connection in the laundry room froze and burst, so water got all over the floor. Thankfully, there are drains in that laundry room. However, some water did come out and make its way over to the football locker room, and there's carpet in there, so we currently have crews over there trying to dry it out. We're hoping for the best, Dunson said. The irrigation pipes broke in the lawn area, and the water was shut off. She said they are going to have to repair those pipes. Associate Vice President of Facilities Management David Whalen said they don't know the extent of the damage to the irrigation system, but will know more as it thaws out. Dunson said a water pipe above the third floor in the attic froze, burst, and cracked in the resident's dining hall, so there was some damage to the units, but she was not sure if there were students in them. The Parker Ranch House had a reverse osmosis line burst, and there was some damage to the ceiling, floor, and sheetrock there, Dunson said. That impacted 6 different student apartments. Whalen noted that had it not been for the quick response of the physical plant and grounds crews, the damage could have been a lot worse. He added that even though the university was closed due to weather, grounds crews were still clearing and salting, making sure students had a clear path. The grounds crew and physical plant crew did a great job last week, Whalen said. Dunson added that so many people helped out, from dining services to volunteers at the food pantry to campus police. This was at a time when people were being advised to stay in. Whalen said he doesn't know how he can thank everyone enough. I don't know how we can possibly tell those people thank them enough. ECISD, www.ectorcountyisd.org. OC, www.odessa.edu. UTPB, www.utpb.edu. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, February 23rd, 2021. Opinion. National View, Cuomo duck and cover up. The point, hidden nursing home deaths demands investigation. Governor Andrew Cuomo is in a political firestorm, entirely of his own making. Had he not been so worried about the political repercussions of transparency, he would not be mired in the repercussions of a political cover-up. But it isn't the governor's political woes that ought to be a concern here. In fact, what his Republican opponents say about him is irrelevant. Officials of a party loyal to an ex-president who extravagantly and continually lied for 4 years in office are now shocked that Mr. Cuomo was less than forthright about COVID-19 nursing home deaths. That should be seen for the opportunistic, overwrought hand-wringing that it is. Ignore it. What matters, though, is Mr. Cuomo's months-long effort to hide complete information on COVID-19 deaths among nursing home residents from the legislature and the public. Now we know why. Politics. To be clear, as far as we know, the administration didn't underestimate the overall number of COVID-19 deaths, but in not revealing how many deaths attributed to hospitals were actually the result of infections in nursing homes, the death rate among nursing home residents looked lower than it actually was. This distinction came to the fore as a result of an executive order by Mr. Cuomo that barred nursing homes from denying admission or readmission of medically stable people solely on the basis of a COVID-19 infection. The governor issued the order in an effort to free up hospital beds for acute cases, then rescinded the order in May amid concerns that it was contributing to COVID-19 infections, which the state still insists was not the case. When the legislature in August asked how many hospital deaths included people who had been nursing home residents, the administration clammed up. And not because the answers were hard to get, as it long claimed. Rather, as Mr. Cuomo's top aide, Melissa DeRosa, explained privately to Democratic lawmakers, the administration was scared that the data might be used against it by the U.S. Justice Department. Now that a court has ordered the administration to release the numbers, we learned that the real tally is about 77% higher than reported last month. And the state's rate of nursing home deaths, compared with its general population, is above the national average, though lower than 19 other states. This bears not just on whether the March order resulted in more infections in nursing homes, but on whether nursing homes were and are taking proper precautions to avoid infection and transmission, whether state oversight of nursing homes is adequate to ensure elderly New Yorkers are well cared for, and whether the for-profit nursing home model should be reconsidered. The situation demands a full and independent investigation, perhaps by the state comptroller or attorney general, and it requires that Mr. Cuomo come to terms with the harm that he can cause by insisting on total control and secrecy when good government demands transparency. This was not just a vague void that Mr. Cuomo now laments his political foes have seized upon. It was a waste of 6 months of vital time, only for the sake of a governor ducking for political cover. The Albany Times-Union. The downsides of raising the minimum wage. For most Americans, being asked if they favor a higher minimum wage is like asking if they like sunshine and ice cream. What's not to like about increasing the rewards for low-paid workers, especially for anyone who has ever been a low-paid worker? This is one of those ideas that you might think would generate disagreement along partisan lines. President Joe Biden wants to increase the national minimum wage to $15 an hour, up from $7.25. It's no surprise that 87% of Democrats support the idea. The surprise is that 62% of Republicans agree. Empathy for essential workers during the pandemic has only made the idea more appealing. But just because an idea is popular doesn't mean it's wise. What economics teaches is that no government intervention in the economy comes without costs, some of which greatly outweigh benefits. This one has major flaws. The most obvious drawback is that raising the price of anything causes people to pay for less of it. Double the price of a gallon of gas or a pound of ground beef, and consumers will cut back on their consumption. When businesses have to pay their employees more, they will search for ways to reduce staffing. Some economists have done studies finding that a higher minimum wage costs few, if any, jobs. But Nada Issa, an economist at Georgetown University, says, "We've never seen an increase of this magnitude." Some economists have done studies finding that a higher minimum wage costs few, if any, jobs. But Nada Issa, an economist at Georgetown University, says, "We've never seen an increase of this magnitude. An increase of a dollar or two per hour is one thing. An increase of $7.75, even over 4 years, is another. It's not the Amazons of the world that will be hurt," Issa points out. "It's mostly small businesses. Those are the same companies that have suffered disproportionately from the pandemic." A recent report from the Congressional Budget Office concluded that a $15 minimum wage would lift 900,000 people out of poverty while destroying 1.4 million jobs. Is that a sensible trade-off? The mistake we make is assuming there is one answer to that question. But different places have different circumstances. A $15 minimum would be a minor matter in places like California, which already has a state floor of $14, Massachusetts, $13.50, and New York, $12.50. The increase would be a huge change, though, in the many states that don't set a minimum above the federal level. The current $7.25 looks far skimpier in Hawaii or California, which have the highest living costs in the country, than in Mississippi or Oklahoma, which have the lowest. The average monthly rent is $689 in Mississippi, but $1,657 in California. That's an argument for federalism, letting states set their own levels to reflect their economic conditions, living costs, educational levels, and prevailing ideology. A state with a lower minimum wage may attract businesses, creating jobs that otherwise would have gone elsewhere. A state with a higher one may lure workers looking to boost their income. There is no answer that suits every state. If we want to raise the incomes of low-wage workers, there's a superior option: expanding the federal earned income tax credit, a sort of wage bonus. It provides up to $3,584 per year for workers in households with one child and a maximum of $6,660 for those with three or more kids. But childless workers can get no more than $538, and only those from the age of 25 to 64 qualify. More generous credits, particularly for workers without kids, would raise incomes at the bottom of the wage scale. Like a minimum wage increase, the change would encourage work by boosting earnings. But unlike a minimum wage increase, it doesn't raise the cost of labor to employers. Result: more people working and earning more for their work. Biden's stimulus plan would increase the maximum sum for childless workers to $1,500 and make more workers eligible for the credit. A bill approved by the House Ways and Means Committee last year would also lower the qualifying age from 25 to 19. Another virtue is that the EITC spreads the cost of helping low-wage workers to all taxpayers, not just those who have the misfortune of owning small businesses. Democratic politicians are entranced by the visible benefits of boosting the minimum wage. The harm it promises to do, luckily for them, will go mostly unseen. Stephen Chapman, Chapman writes for the Chicago Tribune as well as being a syndicated columnist. Find out more, read Chapman's daily blog, www.chicagotribune.com/news/opinion/Chapman. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, February 23rd, 2021. Obituaries. Abel G. Acosta, Fort Stockton. Abel Garcia Acosta passed away on February 10th, 2021. He was born to Eugenio Acosta and Luz Garcia Acosta on April 1, 1935, in Fort Stockton, Texas. He was the youngest of 8 children and preceded in death by his parents and siblings Tomas, Sisto, Francisco, David, Jose, Petra, and Guadalupe. Preceded in death by daughter-in-law Veronica Acosta and beloved wife Francisca Viola Acosta. Survived by Joel and Melanie Acosta. Children, Emily, Evelyn, and Lane Conley, Lane and Luke Abel Jr., Rocky, Eugene, and Carla Acosta. Children, Isabella, Gabriel, and Elias Miguel Antonio Fernando. Children, Alex and Aaron Orlando Javier and Irene Acosta. Children, Michaela, Ariana, and Raquel. Great-granddaughter, Aurora Brielle. Visitation is Thursday, February 25th, 2021, from 2 to 4 p.m. at Heritage Funeral Home, Fort Stockton, Texas. Rosary will begin at 3 p.m. The funeral mass is Friday, February 26th, 2021, at 10 a.m. at St. Joseph Catholic Church, Fort Stockton, Texas. James Lloyd Bagley, Midland. James Lloyd Bagley, 80, went to be with the Lord on Wednesday, February 17, 2021, while surrounded by family at home. James was preceded in death by his parents, Irvin Ray Bagley and Jesse Lorraine Sims Bagley, and by his brother, Charles Bagley. He is survived by his wife of 60 years, Ruby Lee Bagley, and 2 children, Jimmy Bagley and wife Mary Ann, and also Sherry Kirby and husband Mike. James was blessed and survived by 5 grandchildren, Andrew Kirby and wife Chelsea, Justin Bagley and wife Ashton, Sam Gonzalez and wife Rachel, Ashley Kirby and Alyssa Bagley. As if James, a.k.a. Papa, wasn't blessed enough, he is also survived by 5 greater-grandchildren, as well as several step-loves grandchildren. James also has 1 surviving brother, Larry Bagley, and wife, Glenna. James is also survived by many nieces, nephews, and cousins. Mrs. Ruby Bagley and family request that, in lieu of flowers, please make a memorial donation in their names to Hospice of Midland. Family-only visitation on Tuesday, February 23rd, 2021, at Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. Funeral to follow on Wednesday, February 24th, 2021, at 2 p.m. Arrangements are under the direction of Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. Larry Elbert Carroll, Midland. Larry Elbert Carroll, 69, of Midland, went to be with the Lord on Wednesday, February 17, 2021. A celebration of life will be held for family and friends at a later date. Larry was born on January 9, 1952, in Roanoke, Virginia, to Elbert William and Frances Carroll. Those left to cherish his memory are his loving wife of 36 years, Elizabeth Morrow Carroll, his children, Jenny Royer and husband Dana of Middletown, Connecticut, Jonathan Carroll and wife Julie of Springfield, Maryland, Jeanette Whitus and husband Brent of Burnett, Texas, and grandchildren Michaela and Riley Whitus of Burnett, Texas, Cole and Heath Royer of Middletown, Connecticut. Also left with countless memories are his brother John Carroll and wife Virginia of Louisa, Virginia, and sister Tricia Carroll Knighton of Christiansburg, Virginia, sisters-in-law Gula Morrow Robertson and Margaret Morrow Thibodeau, along with several nieces, nephews, cousins, and friends. Larry was preceded in death by his parents, Elbert and Frances Carroll, and many loving aunts and uncles. The family would like to express their gratitude toward the staff of Midland Memorial Hospital and many loving friends who were present during their time of need. In lieu of flowers, donations in his memory may be made to Permia Care, Midland Community Bible Study, Midland Soup Kitchen, or First Baptist Church of Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Carl Douglas Neithercutt, Odessa. Carl Douglas Neithercutt, 83, died on February 12, 2021, in Odessa, Texas. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, February 26, 2021, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home, with John Snyder and Jack Moore officiating. Interment will follow at 4 p.m. in Family Cemetery in Bradshaw, Texas, with military honors. Carl was born in Eunice, New Mexico, to Carl and Floyd Neithercutt on November 3, 1937. Carl is preceded in death by his parents, Carl and Floyd Neithercutt, and daughter Terry Neithercutt, August 30, 2019. Carl is survived by his wife of 63 years, Priscilla Laverne Neithercutt of Odessa, Texas, two daughters, Connie Ernest Tate of Abilene, Texas, and Deidre Allen Denny of Odessa, Texas, four grandchildren, Michael Maddox of Odessa, Texas, Seth and Tiffany Tate of Conroe, Texas, Kimberly and Christopher Refner of Weatherford, Texas, and Dennis and Sarah Drake of California, as well as three great-grandchildren, Camden, Connor, and Kagan Refner of Weatherford, Texas. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Death notices. Natividad Venegas Carrillo, Odessa. Natividad Venegas Carrillo, 75, of Odessa, died Saturday, February 20th, 2021, in Odessa. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Juan Lasoya, Odessa. Juan Lasoya, 70, of Odessa, died Monday, February 15th, 2021, in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 1 p.m., February 24th, 2021, at San Miguel Archangel Catholic Church in Midland. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens in Odessa. Father Patrick Akpanabong and Father Frank Chavez is officiating. Arrangements are by Willowbrook Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Midland. Thomas Coleman Mitto Sosa, Jr., Odessa. Thomas Coleman Mitto Sosa, Jr., 69, of Odessa, died Thursday, February 18, 2021, in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by La Paz Purchase Funeral Homes of Odessa. Red yeast rice, toxic ingredient. Dear Dr. Roach, I am a primary care provider and read your recent column on red yeast rice. I agree with your comments, but would add the concern I have. The presence of citrullin in red yeast rice products that is toxic to the kidneys and noted in 80% of sampled products, as stated in a recent review. Experts strongly advise people not to use it. I hope this is of some help to you and your readers. C.J. Answer. Many studies have confirmed the frequent presence of citrullin in red yeast rice products. In Europe, where there is better regulation of over-the-counter products, citrullin has become a less frequent contaminant, but the most recent data I can find confirms Dr. Jackson's concern about citrullin. Since red yeast rice seems to work primarily through monacolin K, the active form of lovastatin, I continue to recommend against red yeast rice. I strongly recommend using a statin when medication treatment is necessary to lower the risk of heart attack and stroke. They are purified and free of toxic contaminants, and the dosing is exact. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach. Roach's column appears Tuesdays through Saturdays. Readers may write him at P.O. Box 536-475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475. Personality turns dark in the wake of a miscarriage. Dear Abby, my husband and I suffered a miscarriage 5 months ago in the 12th week. I'm still not doing well. I have put on a facade to get by, but I'm just starting to realize how deeply this is affecting my life. I used to be a happy, friendly person, always a smile on my face, and laughter to be shared and hugs for my loved ones. Since the miscarriage, I put on a fake smile and try to be who I once was, but I can't keep doing it. Every day, there is a moment from that day or the aftermath that floods my mind. I'm angry, bitter, mad at the unfairness, and I no longer have compassion or sympathy for others. This isn't me. I don't want to be this way. My happiness has been replaced with tears and sadness. The hopefulness is replaced by emptiness. I'm very lost, and I don't know how to get out of this funk. I no longer want to try to get pregnant again because the fear of the physical and emotional pain of another miscarriage has me paralyzed. Any advice you might give would be greatly appreciated. Broken in Missouri. Dear Broken, please accept my sympathy for the loss of your child. Your depression and the fear you have about another pregnancy are not unusual after a tragedy like the one you have experienced. You are grieving, and the emotions you are feeling are to be expected. Please schedule an appointment with your OBGYN and tell your doctor about all of these feelings, because the doctor can refer you to someone who can help you work through this. It will take time, but I assure you it is doable. Dear Abby, my boyfriend and I have been together for close to a year now. In the beginning, we were crazy about each other and everything was great. Our hometowns are 2 hours apart, so to make it work, he bought us a house right in between. It was an hour each way to our parents' houses. I thought it was the perfect compromise. But now he's telling me he isn't happy here in our new town, and he needs to sell the house and move back home. He says he still wants to be with me and that we are going to make it work, but I can't help but be scared that this is going to be the end of our relationship. Should I tough it out and see if we can actually make it work, or do I call it quits and let go because maybe it just is just not meant to be? Mixed Up in Massachusetts. Dear Mixed Up, you left out one important fact in your letter to me. Why does your boyfriend need to sell the house you share and move back home? Is he so closely tied to his parents that being an hour away is too far? Is it work-related? Is he dissatisfied with your relationship? Ask him these questions because the answers will tell you what you can expect. My advice is to let things play out a bit more before making any decision other than to put the house on the market. Dear Abby, Abigail Van Buren. Write Dear Abby at P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069, or visit www.dearabby.com.
This is Royal Stars Horoscopes by Madeline Aslan. A baby born today has a sun in Pisces and a moon in Cancer. Happy birthday for Tuesday, February 23rd, 2021. Realistic, analytical, and convincing, at heart you are a problem solver. This year, by preparing and being certain about details, you succeed tremendously with a cutting-edge project. More money comes in as well. If single, you need to relax and have fun, but you become more devoted to finding your mate this year. If attached, it must be romantic. This year, you and your partner travel. Capricorn ensures your bliss. Aries, March 21st to April 19th. Today accents your home and family. Discussions revolve around home improvements and decisions about your residence. Visitors suggest interesting ideas and offer valuable insights during casual conversation. Tonight, prepare a house blessing and do a sage smudge with a family member. Taurus, April 20th to May 20th. The pace is fast and somewhat hectic today and promises an interesting schedule punctuated by numerous messages and outings. The secret to juggling several ongoing projects successfully is organization. Tonight, stay informed. Different news will provide valuable perspectives and insights. Gemini, May 21st to June 20th. Prepare for a financial roller coaster ride. Family members will require help and extra assistance. Look for ways to reduce expenses related to housing. Don't overextend yourself financially. Set funds aside to cover an unexpected expense. Tonight, a financial brainstorming session. Cancer, June 21st to July 22nd. This is a great day to plan a journey, either for business or for pleasure. Career prospects are brighter. Heed suggestions offered by others. Communication with loved ones is pleasant and easy. You're the center of attention now. Tonight, all eyes are on you. Leo, July 23rd to August 22nd. You will relish peace and privacy today. Examine the past if you would know the future. During meditation, you might be inspired to pursue charitable work and a volunteer opportunity. Satisfaction comes from helping those in need. Tonight, an early night's sleep. Virgo, August 22nd to September 22nd. Today brings supportive friendships your way. Seek a mentor to help you select worthwhile goals. You are seeking guidance for practical help in resolving problems. You receive an invitation to join a prestigious club or organization. Tonight, discuss with old colleagues. Libra, September 23rd to October 22nd. Today brings pleasant opportunities to combine business with pleasure. Ask co-workers for ideas and assistance. Others have plans in mind that involve you. Maintain goodwill by cooperating and consulting. Tonight, your source of income goes through a shift. Be adaptable and economize. Scorpio, October 23rd to November 21st. Today your attention turns toward distant shores and imported items. You'll tire of all that has become comfortable and familiar. A blockage that has hampered your progress melts away. A goal is about to materialize. Tonight, catch up with friends far away. Sagittarius, today emphasizes your casual friendships and career prospects. Deep roots related to old times are stirring. Make the best of the situation and enjoy the moment. Postpone taking on new projects as they could overwhelm you. Tonight, intimacy in a relationship, pleasure or business, deepens. Capricorn, December 22nd to January 19th. Teamwork, compromise, and flexibility are important today. Partners have strong feelings concerning plans and ideas they wish to discuss with you. You make an important commitment. A sense of completion and freedom surrounds you. Tonight, listen to some of your very favorite music. Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th. Listen carefully. Casual conversations or broadcasts about health overheard coincidentally offer useful information. Keep up with regular medical checkups. Make an appointment today if there is something overdue. Tonight, discussions might fall on you. Let others run the show. Pisces, February 19th to March 20th. Today emphasizes a nurturing and meaningful relationship. Share time outdoors with the one you covet. This promises twists and turns for the better in your relationship. Sudden meetings and partings also play a part in today's drama. Tonight, a relaxing soap and an herbal bath. Born today, writer W.E.B. Du Bois, 1868. Actor Peter Fonda, 1940. Actress Dakota Fanning, 1994.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.